Hello, you're listening to Murder Bird, a podcast where we look at crimes involving women and girls. My name's Sophie. This week is our first unsolved mystery. So if you're not a fan of cases where there's not a resolution, then I'd probably skip this week. This is the story of Geeta Angara. Geeta Angara was born in Chennai, India, in 1961. Chennai, known as Madras until 1996, is located on the Coromandel coast on the Bay of Bengal, which is on the east coast of India, I guess, as I look at India on Google Maps. Geeta earned her bachelor's and master's degrees in chemistry from Loyola College in Chennai. Sorry, I really struggled with that. And she was the first woman in the school's history to do so. She even received a gold medal upon graduating, as she was top of her class. In 1984, when she was around 23 years old, Geeta emigrated to the USA. She earned additional master's degrees and then her doctorate in organic chemistry from New York University. If you're wondering, like I was, what organic chemistry is, it is chemistry, but organic. Or, more sensibly, it is a branch of chemistry that studies the structure, properties, and reactions of organic compounds, which contain carbon and covalent bonding. I have serious respect for anyone who has a scientific mind, because I'm fluent in English and I understand what each word means in that sentence, but all put together, it makes no sense to me. Geeta married another Indian immigrant called Jaya, and the couple settled in Clifton, New Jersey. We all know New Jersey, right? I don't need to tell you where that is. New Jersey Shore. The couple have three children together, Vivek, Pavitra and Priya. And in 1992, Geeta starts working for the Passaic Valley Water Company. 7 years later, the family then moved to Holmdel in Monmouth County, which is about 42 miles south of their previous home in Clifton, as they believed the school systems would be better for their children. So, the plant. The water treatment plant. When I was researching this, a weirdly jarring factoid kept getting brought up, and I didn't really want to include it because I felt like it was just irrelevant, But it keeps popping up and becomes very, very, very slightly relevant later on. So I felt it's probably best I do include it. In 2003, the plant where Geeta worked was used in an episode of Law and Order Special Victims Unit as a filming location. The episode centred on a cover-up of lethal fraternity hazing. One scene had a character's body found floating in a water tank. Brotherhood, which is the episode's name, was the show's first episode, which was aired in 2004. Shocking. I guess it's a bit strange, but I was just surprised how it kept coming up everywhere. Like, every article sort of mentions it. So I'm obviously missing something, but anyway. At one point during her career, Geeta did consider leaving the job. However, she decided to stay when, in 2004, she was promoted to senior chemist and earned her plant operator's license. She also took the lead in transitioning the Totowa plant from the chlorination it had been using to purify its water something she was excited about leading. Geeta was a capable and intelligent person, and despite her doctor status and educational background, she was very humble and insisted on being addressed by her first name by colleagues. She was proud of her work and was a perfectionist, wanting to deliver 100% on any task she took on. Although she only really socialised with the colleagues she worked closely with, she was seen as cheerful and devoted to her work. However, as one of the 2% of employees at the plant who were not white, Geeta encountered some hostilities from the people she worked with. Some employees resented Geeta for receiving a promotion, with one ex-employee telling People magazine that 98% of this plant is white. Not all of them are going to like seeing immigrants do well. And Geeta was doing well, really well. She had even begun the process of applying for another license within the plant, which just evoked more antipathy from certain colleagues. And to them I say, because they won't be listening, but I'm going to say it anyway, get a grip. A few weeks before Geeta's death in late January 2005, she was accused by another employee when a pinkish material was found in treated water. Material that was associated with the ozone cleansing process, and therefore, apparently, Geeta's responsibility, even though she had been out sick that week and it was resolved before she returned to work. The atmosphere at work was hostile and the friction was amplified when Geeta was asked to retrain colleagues to ensure a mistake like this did not happen again. On the 8th of February 2005 at 7:30 a.m, Geeta arrived at the plant for another day of work. At around 9:45 a.m, Geeta joined some of her colleagues in the canteen for breakfast. During this breakfast, one of her colleagues, who I will refer to as Colleague 1, because they are relevant, but I have no idea who this person is, told Geeta that the plant's filters and clarity sensors needed calibrating today, an assertion that is supported by plant records. Geeta assured Colleague 1 that she would do that today. The group splits off and Geeta returns to the building where she would normally work. At approximately 10:30 a.m, carrying a clipboard, glass beaker and two-way radio, Geeta leaves her office to complete a task she had done many times before without incident. She left behind her jacket and sandwich she was going to eat at lunch. 10:30 a.m. would also be the last time that Geeta is seen alive. Geeta descended to the plant's lower level, a labyrinth of narrow concrete tunnels lined by large pipes. Beneath her feet were interconnected tanks, which collectively held around 10 million gallons of purified water, each 35 feet deep, with just one way in or out. A rectangle metal plate at the top of the tank set in the concrete floor. There was no ladder to help you reach this rectangle, and there is no way of standing once you are in the inky black water of a tank. Colleague 1 ventured down to the plant's lower level around 15 to 20 minutes after Geeta had left to complete the calibration task. She had not returned to her desk, and when Colleague 1 walked down one of the passageways, they noticed some broken glass. Broken glass that would later be identified as the beaker Geeta had been carrying. Colleague 1 didn't put two and two together, but began asking where Geeta was at around 11 a.m, 30 minutes after Geeta had last been seen. For some inexplicable reason, despite Geeta being a devoted and hard-working employee, despite colleague one asking questions as early as 11 a.m, her absence was not properly noticed by employees until 9:20 p.m. How? How is that possible? Nobody checked in with her or needed her at any point during the rest of their shift. She didn't go missing at 5 to 5. She went missing first thing in the morning. No one, she was a superior. No one needed her. No one needed anything checking by her. Nobody wanted to chat with her. You know, I've never worked in a water plant before, but I have worked, and I've worked in places where you're not all in the same area all at one time. And every single shift, I've had to check in with someone, or someone's had to check in with me. And that's when I was getting paid minimum wage, and I was a 19-year-old dickhead, like, not, you know, a superior established person who, you know, working somewhere as important as a water treatment plant. And like, when you're working with the same group of people all day every day, I just find it mind-blowing and disappointing that nobody noticed until nearly 12 hours later. It was a night shift employee who first noticed that Geeta's car was still in the car park and that her coat and sandwich had been left untouched. They raised concerns, and three employees who had worked that day returned to the plant to help look for Geeta. I mean, if you're willing to leave your house in the middle of the night after working all day to look for a colleague, where were you like earlier in the day? And this is purely conjecture and I'm judging, but I don't know. Geeta's family had also been trying to contact her, as she'd been due to pick up her daughter from an afternoon basketball game. It wasn't until one of the workers at the plant contacted the family to tell them that they didn't think Geeta had ever left work. She was then officially reported missing to police just before midnight on the 8th of February. When workers had been searching for Geeta, they had found one of the panels in the lower level passages slightly ajar. A panel that acted as the only entrance or exit to one of the 35-foot deep water tanks beneath. 12 of the screws had been broken or were missing. This panel was also close by to the pile of glass that colleague one had spotted earlier that day. The beaker glass. The beaker glass that had been helpfully swept up by a worker and disposed of. At around 2 a.m. on February 9th, PVWC officials drained the tank underneath the broken panel. Once drained, they discovered Geeta's radio and clipboard. Other tanks were drained because, although you could only enter and exit them via the panels, all the tanks were interconnected, and officials were concerned that if Geeta had fallen in, she may have migrated elsewhere. Unfortunately, they were correct, and Geeta's body was discovered at 6:30 p.m, a full 30 hours after she had been last seen. Geeta was just 43 years old. The autopsy found that Geeta had been alive when she had entered the water, and her official cause of death was reported as drowning. However, other findings began to paint a picture of a slightly more sinister outcome. Geeta's neck had deep bruises, suggesting strangulation, and there were other bruises on her waist and elbow, which pointed to a struggle. This, combined with the unusual manner of death and the smashed beaker, meant that 6 days after she disappeared, Geeta's death was ruled as a homicide. Unfortunately, any physical evidence was compromised due to a multitude of factors. Geeta's body had been submerged in water that was around 2 degrees Celsius or 36 degrees Fahrenheit and was heavily chlorinated, which meant that any DNA evidence had been destroyed. Police and firefighters had been trampling along the crime scene before it was established as a crime scene. There were no security cameras in the basement. The sensor that detected water displacement that would have set off an alarm if a large object, such as a human body, had entered the water and raised the level, was not functioning. The glass from the beaker had been swept up and disposed of, and the loud machinery in the lower levels would have muffled any noise of a struggle or glass breaking. The only factor that was an advantage for investigating officers was the limited pool of suspects. Out of the 83 colleagues employed at the PVWC plant, 50 were recorded as working the day that Geeta went missing. Investigators surmised that due to security and the location of the plant, the likelihood was that the person who committed the murder was an employee at the plant. They discussed motive. There was no evidence of sexual assault, so this was ruled out. And for some reason, the Law and Order episode was considered to be a potential motive, but that was ruled out too. Because ironically, we're not all living in an episode of Law and Order. Investigators then moved on to an unplanned murder hypothesis, possibly due to a workplace disagreement or that Geeta saw something that she shouldn't have. Two women at the plant were widely known to dislike Geeta. However, it was decided that they would not have been capable of this. I'm not sure why. I would love to know the reason why. Oh wait, I do. The reason why the women weren't considered to be capable of this is because investigators and whoever else decided that the panel was very big and very heavy, and therefore it must have been a man who moved it. So the panel was 165 centimetres in length and around 76 kilograms in weight. I mean, I couldn't lift that. But as the county coroner argued, a woman of sufficient physical health probably could have. Investigators had concluded that the perpetrator will have been male and that the motive could have potentially been due to the professional jealousy and or a workplace argument. Suspects were whittled down to 8 men. Their alibis were not watertight and their stories had gaps or didn't make sense. This would make me suspicious too, because you're at work. How can you not be clear about your alibi and where you were and what you were doing? The police don't care if you were fobbing work off. How can you not be clear about where you were and what you were doing? A year after the crime, suspects had been whittled down even further to 3 males, all workers at the plant who were on site that day. One of the suspects was our friend, colleague one. James Wood, the chief homicide detective for the prosecutor's office, said he believed that one of the suspects had been on the brink of confessing before lawyering and shutting up, and despite lie detector tests, which are redundant, many DNA tests, interviews, revisits to the crime scene, and reviews by federal and state environmental regulators, no concrete evidence was found, and none of the suspects were charged with a crime. In the middle of 2006, the case was classified as cold, and despite being reviewed in 2007 by the request of Geeta's family, no new evidence has been discovered yet. Keyword. This brings us to the theories as to what happened to Geeta. other than being murdered by a jealous or vengeful colleague. One alternative theory considered by investigating officers is the connection to an unsolved 1968 homicide. On the 31st of August 1968, 22-year-old Joan Freeman was found in another water treatment plant in Passaic. Joan had been attacked from behind, struck on the head with a wooden mallet, and her throat had been slit, despite her initial wounds being deemed enough to have killed her. There was no DNA evidence on the wooden mallet that was recovered, and the knife was never found. There was nothing in Joan's personal professional life to indicate an obvious suspect, much like Geeta, and this is another case of a woman being murdered in a secure facility when they are meant to be safe and working a shift. Another theory is that it was an accident. In May 2006, investigators considered that what happened to Geeta was a freak accident. A Scottish forensic pathologist called Derek Pounder from the University of Dundee is an expert in drownings, specifically cold water drownings, which is just a testament to you can be whatever you want to be. Derek said that in some cases, victims of cold water drownings will show deep bruises and petechiae, red spots from broken capillary blood vessels. These mimic injuries often seen when someone is strangled. As Geeta was cremated, her body could not be exhumed for further investigation. However, I think it is important to add that five individual pathologists reviewed and deemed the case to be homicide. So although it is important to consider all possibilities, there are five different professionals who came to the same conclusion. So if it was an accident, it's hypothesised that the rectangle plate had been moved for some reason and then not returned back into place for some reason, and Geeta had just fallen in. So the passageways that employees frequently have to use are so dimly lit that an employee is not able to see a massive rectangle hole in the ground directly in front of them. There's electricity down there. It's not that dark. It's not Dracula's castle. They'll be able to see what's directly in front of them. And if not, then it's negligence on the company's part. In 2015, Geeta's daughter said that her mother was exceedingly cautious, and that to believe that this was an accident would be ignoring a lot of information that is available and points to the contrary. And I have to say I agree. When I first heard about this case, I thought it was going to be something similar to Elisa Lam, who is the subject of the Hotel Cecil documentary on Netflix. I've not watched it, but I am aware of the theories about what happened to Elisa, and I thought this was going to be similar, but looking at what happened surrounding Geeta's disappearance and the discovery of her body, I also sort of feel that something nefarious happened. And as of this episode's recording, Geeta's case is open, but it is inactive. Well, thank you for listening to this week's episode of Murder Bird. I know unsolved cases can be frustrating for some people, but I do think it's important to raise awareness about unsolved cases as well as cases who have neat resolutions. I know what I think happened. I feel like I've made that very clear. Again, I've not been hugely unbiased, but I have presented the facts. I've just made my opinions semi-clear, I guess. But I would be interested to hear what you guys think happened to Geeta. So just let me know. You can contact me on Instagram or Twitter at MurderBirdPod. You can email me, murderbirdpod@gmail.com. I've got a Facebook page. I do look at it. I'm on it all the time, but I just haven't updated it yet. I'm still trying to think of how to manage that. But feel free to like me on there, I guess. Otherwise, I will be back next week with a new case. So I will see you then.